Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Jim Budd. How are you, Jim?
I'm fine, yeah.
Excellent. What we're going to talk about today is more about some of the regulation associated with fine wine investing and all that sort of stuff.
Important, very important issues.
You mentioned earlier that some wine is regulated under the FSA, and there was talk about an industry group getting together to try and form some sort of regulation for the wine investment. Where are we with wine regulation for wine investment?
Wine funds are regulated because they're a collective investment.
Mm.
And so that in a wine fund, you pay your money in, so you pay money not for individual cases, but you send so much, say 50,000 to the wine fund.
You talk big numbers.
Well, wine funds are the top end, and in fact they have to be, because collective investments have to be targeted to sophisticated and high value individuals.
Yeah.
So you pay your money into the wine fund, and they then buy the wine, manage that, and buy and sell, etc., etc. So it works like a unit trust.
Yeah.
And that has some regulation. There is no regulation of if you sell wine to individuals, so individual cases to individuals. Of course, difficult to regulate that, because it may be for drinking and maybe for investment.
Yeah.
I think there's an area that if you are pushing wine investment through, for instance, on the net, so on your website, then what you're allowed to say about wine investment should be regulated. So there should be criteria established by the FSA or a successor as to what claims that you're able to make, and a way of very quickly refer if the criteria of what you're allowed to say are being broken, then that should be very quickly raised with the FSA or a successor body. You talked about the setting up a self-regulatory group.
Yep.
I would like to see some sort of regulation within the industry. I think it's probably unlikely that the FSA is going to do that, because its recent proposals would appear to relate to wine funds and not to the individual investors.
Yep.
I do, however, think that any industry-led regulation has got to be independently set up and independently managed.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that the Wine Investment Association that you mentioned, you will have seen in that article in The Independent, I have huge concerns about that.
Oh, why is that?
Because of the companies involved. There are four companies. Certainly one of those companies is called Vinex. Vinex was set up by Peter Shakeshaft. He was the group director for a company called Wills & Co, stockbrokers.
Mm-hmm.
That company was closed down following a number of censures by the FSA, with individuals censured. That illustrates why I think it's so crucial that it's independent and not, you know, something that's closely associated with an individual company.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, once it's been set up, then companies can adhere, you know, can become part of that association. But that association has to be independently managed.
Yeah.
The assistant director for Vinex is a guy called Darren Lansdowne. If you do a search on Darren Lansdowne, you'll find the 19-page censure that was handed down in, I think, February 2010 by the FSA, censuring Darren Lansdowne and requiring that he resigned as a director.
Okay, so you've got those sort of people saying they want to set up a regulatory body.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, one's faced with two issues when they move into wine investment. Is that a company you would want to deal with?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, if they're going to be involved in wine regulation, and indeed, I mean, Peter Shakeshaft has talked about the importance of having transparency in wine investment. For me, that transparency has to cover not just the process of the investment, but the transparency has to cover the people involved.
In the organisation?
In the organisation and the people selling. So if you're giving wine investment, you should be a person who's considered to be fit, a person who's fit and proper to give investment advice.
All right. And do you think they should be like independent financial advisors then?
I think that there should be any organisation has got to, as I say, needs to be managed and set up independently. And so it may well be that it would have to be done through something, an organisation like the British Standards Institute. Be a more expensive option, but it would be a credible option. This is not a credible option. And moving away from Vinex, we've also got one of the companies involved is Albany Portfolio Management. One of the directors is David Jackson. David Jackson was general manager of Golden Williams, which closed in the public interest, beginning of 2002. He then went and formed Bordelais and Dutch, which was also a wine investment company, as Golden Williams was. He was a director of that. That was closed down the following year in January by petition by the DTI, again in the public interest. He was then subsequently in 2005, and I don't know for how long, working for a character called Stephen Cleave. And Cleave has been involved in numerous scams. He was barred as a director for 8 years. I was aware that David had become a director of this company. He became a director last year. I hadn't publicised it because I hadn't received any complaints about Albany Portfolio Management, which I thought was, you know, reputably run, and I was prepared to give him the benefit of the doubt. Now that, if you look in the latest issue of Decanter, there's David Jackson talking about bogus wine sellers, horror stories. Now, excuse me, somebody with that background should not be a spokesperson for a wine investment body.
Okay. Yeah.
Or if you're going to do so, then you have to make it absolutely transparently clear what your background is so that the public and the fine wine sector is able to judge you on a full history.
Yeah.
No, I mean, for instance, the journalist who I greatly respect for, who wrote that piece for Decanter, was not told by Jackson what his background was.
Without doing really quite a lot of detailed back checking, you've just got
I'm in no way criticising that journalist. He was talking to somebody who he thought the company was reputable with good reason.
Yep.
He had no reason to know of Jackson's past. So given the demands of writing, you can't check everybody out in detail. Of course you can't. So the onus is on people like Jackson who have a past is to make that clear.
Mm. What about picking wines up at auction? That's quite fraught at the best of time if you are buying investment-grade wines. Once they get to a certain age, you know, the only place to really source them is from auction. And there's been quite a few horror stories about that in the past.
Friend Rudy.
Yeah. And do you consider that needs regulation or some sort of tidying up, or is it best to rely on the quality of the auction house and buyer beware?
I mean, I have to say that although I've been to the occasional auction, it's not an area I look at regularly. Mm-hmm. Clearly, some auction houses should have been much more careful about what put in auction. But I think that also extends to wine companies as well, you know, who are offered parcels of wine. Do they really properly check out where those parcels of wine came from?
Yeah.
There was an instance earlier this year when there was a dealer in Luxembourg was scammed by somebody pretending to be Yaya Touré's agent. It was apparently for Yaya Touré's birthday party. It turns out Yaya Touré doesn't actually drink, but Yaya Touré knew nothing about this. It was somebody pretending to be...
Who's Yaya Touré, sorry?
He's a footballer for Manchester City.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
And the party was supposed to be for him and Didier Drogba.
Okay.
And the Luxembourg guy handed over a substantial amount of wine, and that wine disappeared, turned up with a wine company over here. Now, I'm not saying in any way that the wine company was involved in that scam, but they were offered the wine, and I rather doubt that they did the proper checks. I mean, the wine was brought up by a guy on a train.
Oh, okay, yeah, all right.
So did they really check provenance? And I think those are issues that the wine trade quite possibly needs to tighten up, but I can't give you lots of instances of that because I haven't looked at it indeed.
Well, that raises an interesting thing about, so on one hand, when you're buying wine for investment purposes, you need to be careful about where you're buying them from because you may not get delivery, but also then it's the provenance of wines.
Provenance is probably if you're best to buy younger vintages for wine investment, or to be, if you are buying older vintages, to be very clear where that has come from.
Have you heard of any problems with bonded warehouses? Because you can buy the wines from a reputable producer and then you put it into a bonded warehouse and then it sits there for 10, 20 years or whatever, and then you hopefully you pick it up and or sell it on. You've got a lot of trust in that the bonded warehouse has got good security to keep people out from swapping your wine out, really. Is there any, have you heard of any issues? The ones I've been to have been in Hong Kong, and they seem fairly secure with cameras and all that sort of stuff.
I think the leading bonded warehouses are secure. There is a story I'll tell you about in a minute about a smaller bonded warehouse that wasn't so secure. But on bonded warehouses, I mean, I think one important point is that it's best to store the wine in your own account, not under an umbrella account, not in customer reserves. So if you want full control over your wine, open up your own account, particularly if you've got, you know, substantial amount of wine, you should be doing that.
I don't know. I don't have wine in bonded warehouses.
Well, it's opening your own private account rather than an account which is, let's say, Fine Wine Merchants Limited have an account at London City Bond or Octavian, and they have under that customer reserves, and it's reserved, all right, it is reserved in customers' names.
But not particular cases.
Well, that should also be ought to be indicated. If it's not, there can be problems if the company goes down. But in order to be able to move your wine, you've got to have the company's say-so. And if the company's disappeared, so I think the best solution is to have your own account.
Mm-hmm. And you said there was...
I said, yes, there was a bonded warehouse, somewhere in the West Country. A number of years ago, somebody had a substantial holding of wine, including Petrus and so on. And the bonded warehouse, this is a small bonded warehouse and not, I think, a very reputable one. There was allegedly an accident, and amazingly, the accident involved the most expensive wines in his collection.
As it happens.
As it happens. I suspect that there may not have been an accident, but the wines may have been purloined.
Well, wouldn't the insurance companies want to see sort of the damaged bottles or...
Well, that was the, you know, there didn't appear to be evidence of the damaged bottles or not. I can't remember all the details, but that is an occasional horror story from a bonded warehouse.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, on the whole, that's not going to happen. I mean, London City Bond did have a problem a year or so ago with their warehouse.
The roof collapsed.
The roof collapsed, but that wouldn't have affected the fine wine. That was up in the Midlands, up in Stoke and Trenton, in a completely different building.
Yeah.
A much more secure building. Similarly, Octavian is underground.
Yeah. Okay. All right then, Jim. Is there anything else we need to be aware of about fine wine investing or investing in wines?
I think, I mean, clearly it's possible to make money in fine wine investment. I mentioned the site Wine Searcher, but also I think you shouldn't forget LiveX. That's useful,
yep.
Particularly the indices, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
I think also what's often forgotten, you see nice and tidy graphs and so on about, you know, how wine has gone up and so on. But what's also forgotten is, A, it's not as easy to sell as stocks and shares.
So yep.
Although it's a liquid asset, it's not that liquid.
Yeah, yeah.
And also what's often not taken into account are the storage charges.
Yes.
Now, storage charges on 2,000 Petrus in proportion, paying £15 a case a year, in terms of, you know, a case of Petrus 2,000 isn't really going to make a lot of difference. But lower down the scale, £15 a year over 10 years is 150 quid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's going to cut a lot of profit on a wine outside, you know, the super seconds and the first, going to cut that down a lot.
Mm.
Those sorts of things have to be taken into account.
Yeah, and you don't really hear about things like the storage charges.
That's forgotten.
And if you don't keep them in good storage, then their value decreases anyway.
Well, if you're going to do wine investment, it has to be in a bonded warehouse, and it's because you don't want to pay VAT and duty on it, nor does the person you eventually want to sell it to.
Yeah. All right then, Jim. Well, I'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time, mate.
Pleasure.
It's been brilliant.
Thanks, Chris.